and welcome to yet another episode of Fanatic Flyers Weekly, the 2-0 edition of Fanatic Flyers Weekly. It's Jason Martinez alongside Joe Torti. Joe, what's going on?
We haven't gotten to talk sticks and pucks in a long time.
I know.
Since the demise of the OG crew, yeah, of the Stick to Hockey podcast.
Yeah, but, my kids love the stick. They like the pocky sticks.
The pocky sticks?
Yeah, it's a good item.
Hicks.
Yeah, exactly. So the season's underway, and we're going to talk to Chris Therrien coming up momentarily.
Nice.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Bundy about what he has seen out of this Flyers team just two games in. Now, a lot of teams, some teams around the league have played upwards of four games, including a team like Carolina, who's opened up the season at 4-0. Flyers have only played two. Of course, they've played the Global Series game, that 4-3 win over Chicago to open the season in Prague, Joe, and then the home opener last night at the Wells Fargo Center. I guess the technical home opener, because the Prague game, they were the home team. But a 4-0 win, and Carter Hart becomes the youngest Flyers goaltender in their history to record a shutout at 21 years of age and 57 days.
I've got to say, Jason, I'm allowing myself to hope.
Uh-huh.
Hope against hope that this kid's the actual, genuine article,
mm-hmm,
right? Because we've seen it a lot, not just with the Flyers, with a lot of teams. When you see somebody come in as a rookie, second-year player, playing sheltered minutes or just limited exposure and looking like a wunderkind, and then all of a sudden tape gets out and there's the book on how to beat this guy, and then they kind of fade back into the background.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like that's going to be the case with this guy. So if you've been waiting, you know, the Bernie Parent, Pelly Lindbergh, you've been waiting this entire time, it looks like the future has finally arrived.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, you call it the Messiah, the white whale, whatever you want to call it. This has been a goaltender graveyard in Philadelphia. Now, granted, it was 31 games last year, 30 started. He had a .917 save percentage last year and a .278 goals against average. Just two games this year, he's given up three goals in the two games. So, and obviously, he was very good against the New Jersey Devils in that 4-0 win. Is it all the data you need to see? No, there's guys that have come into this league, and guys, if you go back to guys like Jim Carrey,
sure,
with the Washington Capitals, or the Hamburglar Andrew Hammond went on that run in Ottawa that led them to the playoffs from that improbable position they were in. Look at Jordan Binnington last year. The book, maybe still for some people, is out on him, and he went all the way and won 16 games in the playoffs to win a cup as a rookie, which nobody ever had done before. So is he the savior? Boy, you watch the game last night and you see all the technical things in his game, and it's all there.
Well, and
every
and
element.
The thing that we had questions about before, Jason, is that we knew that the technical side was a major strength of his, right? But what we didn't know is, how's he in scramble? How's he going to do, mm-hmm, 5-on-3? You know what I mean? And he answered on a 2-on-1 with Taylor Hall, just fundamentally sound perfect. And then the split glove save,
yeah,
on the 5-on-3 was just the stuff that dreams are made of. So a lot of questions are being answered. Like you said, you'd like to see it more. You'd like to see, mm-hmm, it over 82 games. But at this point, you've got to feel really good. He couldn't be doing a whole lot better than he's doing right now.
Yeah, no question about it. The one goal, maybe in the Chicago game, the first goal that he gave up to Nylander, some people said, well, maybe he'd like to have that one back. And, you know, you looked at the shot, it didn't look like an overly dangerous situation, but I would caution people because this is Alex Nylander, by the way, does two good things. A, he pulls the puck into his feet, which really makes it more difficult of a read for the goalie. And then B, he used Justin Braun as a screen and, yes, shot it through his leg. So it's a tough puck to pick up. But if you want to say that's a goal, you go, okay, he could have had that one. I'll buy it. So I'm fine with that. But that being said, you're right. The 5-on-3, full 2 minutes of 5-on-3 last night, and the save that is the save of the season probably in the league so far, was absolutely ridiculous. That's a full dot-to-dot cross-the-ice pass. And he's got to basically almost put the glove in the goal at full extension to even keep it out. It was amazing.
Well, and sometimes you see goalies make those saves, Jason, and it looks spectacular. And then you look at the replay, it's like, that was missing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was why.
Or the guy shot it in your glove.
You know? Exactly. This is not the case. This was, mm-hmm, a corner seeker that you got in the way of.
Yep.
It was such a hard shot that, through no fault of Carter Hart's, couldn't hold on to it perfectly, cleanly. Like, mm-hmm, that tells you kind of the scoring chance that it was. And the fact that he was able to make that stop was remarkable. Now, having said that, too, we'd be remiss if we didn't give Alain Vigneault a lot of credit, because, mm-hmm, you look at the way defensively that the Flyers seem to be structured, and it is worlds different through two games, given,
yep,
than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, and it's the first time the Flyers, Joe, have won two straight games to start the season in 8 seasons. that's kind of a microcosm of where they've been. You know, make the playoffs one year, get knocked out in the first round, not make it the next. Win 10 games in a row, not make the playoffs. Lose 10 games in a row, make the playoffs, all while getting knocked out in the first round. The first time they've gone 2-0 in 8 seasons. They do that last night under pretty tough circumstances. Now, you consider that and the tough circumstances. I want to get back to Elaine Vigneault in a minute, but going to Prague, you lose to that team in an exhibition game in Zurich. They weren't happy about that. In Switzerland, then you win your opener, but then you got to fly back. You got a couple days off, but I thought something was really interesting. And before the game last night, I had a chance to sit down with Mike Yeo, Flyers assistant coach, and talk to him. And the captains and the leadership group of this team, because of all the travel, they had a certain days off, and they have mandatory days off in the CBA. And on one of the mandatory off CBA days, the players decided to get together and have a captain's practices. Now, no coaches can be on the ice for those, but they wanted to be on the ice because it would have been 3 days out of 4 that they were not on the ice because of the travel. First of all, it's great leadership.
Clearly.
And the team knew that being off the ice that much this early in the season would not have boded well for them in their return home to take on New Jersey. So they got together, they went out, and they worked. And it's part of the reason why maybe they weren't as rusty as they would have been after that trip.
And it also tells you something about the perception of the leadership, right? Where there are younger players on the team saying, you know, if Voracek and Claude Giroux are going to be on the ice, I sure as anything
had exactly
be
what Konechny said to me after the game last night.
Yep.
He said, look, they sent out a text to everybody on the team. And when you see these texts coming from your captain, from Hayes and Voracek and your leadership group that says, guys, let's get out on the ice. Are you going to be the one that sends like a gift back and says, no thanks? You know,
exactly. I
mean, you're going to look like a real ass. But that didn't happen. And they get out there on the ice and they've performed well. But let's go back to Vigneault real quick, because you brought up a great point. Elaine Vigneault has sent a shot over the bow and a message to this team in training camp that this is not the same as it was. This is different on every level. The general manager has sent that message out and through verbally and also in his actions and in hiring Elaine Vigneault. And while the defensive part of the ice has been cleaned up, and I think Braun and Niskanen bring a lot of structure to that with a lot of those younger defensemen, but you see Vigneault's coaching system on display with the forecheck, and then the two opponents that they've taken on so far in Chicago and in New Jersey, they've had a really hard time dealing with the Flyers' forecheck.
Well, and you look at it, the thing has always been with Elaine Vigneault coach teams, there's an exciting brand of hockey, but it's always been defense first, and then the question becomes, do you have the firepower offensively to execute the system, put up enough goals in order to win games? And you're right, part of that is a suffocating forecheck that looks way different
comes
than
in waves
we've seen. And not only that, Jason, they're aggressive from the jump. You're not sending one in, you're sending two in to start, and then you're cycling back and trying to cover after that. Like, that is something that if the team buys into, because it is something that they haven't done before. So far through two games, we've seen buy-in, and it has worked out tremendously in terms of generating turnovers.
Yeah. Well, the one thing is, and if you would kind of to deem his forecheck, you would deem it as a 1-2-2. Now, most teams will run like a 2-1-2, and the first two is the two D-men. The other is you're basically your third forward, and then there's, you know, F1, F2 on the puck. F1 goes to the puck or the man. F2 supports, seals the wall. F3 is the high guy. When you run this 1-2-2, that second wave of two coming in, where actually your 1D becomes a 4F, is where the teams are having all the problems. And if you have speed to support it, the speed does two things. It makes that forecheck come in waves. So after the initial forecheck opportunity, the second wave hits while the other two forecheckers, F1 and F2, I don't know if this is getting too technical or not, they almost recoil.
Yes.
But by being able to play a team with the speed that can execute a 1-2-2 forecheck, you also have the ability, if a turnover does happen, to get back and create back pressure, which we're seeing as well.
Well, and two parts of that, and I think that that wasn't all that too technical. I think that that was pretty well painted. One of the big things that you have to do is you have to have the personnel to do that, right? So you have a Travis Konechny, who you would regard as a pest in terms of the forecheck.
And can move.
And can recover and get back on the other side.
Yeah.
Claude Giroux, I would argue, the same way in terms of generating turnovers on that forecheck. And you talked about the Braun Niskanen signings. I know that some people were wondering, is that a lot of money? Did you give up too much? Whatever it is. Say what you want about it. It allows you to properly slot the other defenseman on the team. And so you have a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, for example, able to do something that he is better at, say, pinching, pressuring, things like that, without having to worry about, hey, I'm getting toasted because of that cycle back from the forwards.
Yeah, no question about it. And the slotting, and that's a great term. I use it all the time. The addition of one player oftentimes re-slots a team and puts guys in a more advantageous position, which is why they went out and they acquired a couple right shot D and Niskanen and Braun to slot them with a younger player. So you had veteran and youth and never had youth and youth together. That didn't work as well. But also when you go out and you sign Kevin Hayes and you talk about, you know, one of the things when they made the trade for the acquisition of the rights to Kevin Hayes and then the subsequent contract to avoid him even getting to his unrestricted free agency. Look, you got to overpay when you do that. It's an aggressive move, but if you have a need for a 2C, as they did, they went out and they identified the best guy that was on the market for that position, other than Matt Duchene, who was going to be considerably more money. And they pay Kevin Hayes, and then it also slots Nolan Patrick in the right spot. Problem is, Nolan Patrick's dealing with the migraines now and is not healthy. Eventually, that comes to fruition, but as long as he can get healthy. But Kevin Hayes is a guy that I watched a decent amount watching around the league, and I watched the whole league. You know, sure. I watched the Rangers. I watched Winnipeg when he was there, where he never seemed to grab footing last year. But seeing him every day, he's a better hockey player than I thought he was.
Well, and certainly for this coach, right? Like, if you look at some of his best years occurred under Alain Vigneault, you know that typically speaking, you're going to need, and you see this all the time with new coaches coming in, typically there's an ambassador from a former team that this guy's been on to translate,
like a translator,
the new coach to the team. And that is Kevin Hayes' role. He just happens to be more than just a translator. He's also contributing in a pretty good clip. Now, the goal was not a beauty that he got, but maybe it takes the lid off a little bit, and you'll see some more grinder type goals from Kevin Hayes.
Yeah, and to be big up the middle like that, he can kill penalties, so he will be on the power play and the penalty kill. That looks improved. Special teams look better, and you see a lot of him coaching on the bench as well for guys. The other thing that has been kind of apparent to me in the first two games is the fact that three lines that you can send out there have legitimate NHL goal scorers on them.
Sure.
Because we all see the teams that have success in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You look at a team like Vegas 2 years ago. I didn't think they had a number one line, but they had three number two lines.
Sure.
Which
makes
means
sense.
Can score, right? So, and when you do that, you stress your opponent so bad because they don't know where the matchup is that they have to avoid on a given night. And you look at the success of that Couturier line with Lindblom and Travis Konechny. And they're also drawing the opposition's best line. Like in that Chicago game, they had the Kane and Taves line the whole night.
Yes.
And they outplayed them, they outpossessed them, and that's a great sign.
And in contrast, right, you look at, say, the Edmonton Oilers, a very top-heavy, talented team. It almost doesn't matter how elite your top-end talent is because we've seen it before, Jason. It's easier to break things than build things. It's easier to pull out an elite-level defense core to try to shut something down than to score on an elite-level defense core. We've seen it. We watched it up close with Sean Couturier.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how good Evgeny Malkin is. Couturier is out there to break stuff, and he broke Evgeny Malkin more times than he didn't when Malkin's trying to build stuff. So you do have more balance now that way versus being top heavy. It was great when Voracek and Giroux were scoring all the goals and getting all the points.
Yeah.
But if you shut that line down, you shut down the Flyers.
Yeah.
It's not true this year.
Yeah, you can contain a team a lot better. And that's why you had all those years of no playoff round wins, because you didn't have depth. It's all about depth.
Yes.
When you look at the teams that have win cups, you know, when the Penguins did it, you had that number one center line with Crosby, then the number two line, where, by the way, Malkin in those years would have been
one on every other team.
Yeah, on 29 other NHL teams, he's the number one center. It just happened to be the Penguins, where you have Crosby, who was the greatest player in the world. And then you also had a guy like Bonino on that third line.
Perfect role for him.
Yeah, and guys that could put the puck in the net, whether it was James Neal through the years or Patrick Hornquist, whoever, and Phil Kessel, and all those years. And that's why they had success. And they have more balance right now, too. And then you couple that, like, you see some of these young players. And let's talk about Travis Konechny for a minute.
Yeah.
His game's perfect for not only the league today, but this coach.
Yes, absolutely. You look at, we talked about him being a pest. It seems that he's gotten, to me, more responsible defensively over the course of the last couple of years. And really, it's been the last, like, 6 months has been the marked improvement. The last couple of months of the last season and then the beginning of this season, where he's really taken that part of his game very seriously. The other part that I think is just something that goes totally unnoticed sometimes is that when players commit to cleaning up turnovers, simplifying games and things like that. Travis Konecny, say what you want about him, used to be a turnover machine.
Yeah.
He was going a million miles a minute, and that's just all the good and bad that come with that. But in this case, you saw him trying to settle things down, play a little bit more simply, and kind of channel his energy in this system. You talk about perfect fit, and there are some other guys on the team as well, but he's like the poster child for what makes the Flyers so difficult to play against today.
And you're right, like he would try and take the puck into the middle 1-on-3, and then it's a turnover transition the other way into an odd man rush. Now he sees that situation, just chip it deep, change, get in on the forecheck, simplifying your game. And that takes time for guys to learn, because at other levels they go 1-on-3 and you know, when the competition's not an NHL competition, they get away with it.
Sure.
At the NHL level, you're not going to get away with that. And he didn't get away with it, and put him in the doghouse a lot, not to mention being on the wrong side of the puck in the defensive zone, you know, on the wall, board battles and those kind of things. The other guy, though, that I don't know if a lot of people realize just how good he is, but Oscar Lindblom. Now, we were talking to Alain Vigneault, this is about a couple weeks ago, I think it was, before one of the preseason games, and he said everybody wants to play on a line with him, and that like stuck with me. I'm like, wow, why? You know, veteran guys want to play on a line with him. Young guys want to play on a line. And I go, why is that? Well, first of all, he's really smart.
Yes,
he makes just really smart hockey plays. He's never a guy that you ever had to tell. I remember Dave Haxtell saying this. You never had to tell him to go to the net. He just went.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's really good below the goal line.
Well, so part of it, too, and this is a common thread across when you're looking at Marchand, when you're looking at Hagelin, other people that say, I want to play on a line with that guy, they're all puck hunters.
Yeah.
They're all guys who will go, and Lindblom
always
is
get
absolutely
back.
That
yeah.
way. Yeah, he's a puck hunter. He'll go track down the loose pucks. You said he's smart. He makes all of the right plays. He'll generate some offense by going to the scoring areas and defensively responsible. I mean, what more can you ask for from a guy? Now, having said that, I hear the concerns, and people have talked about this before. You know, a criticism of Jake Voracek for a long time was he looks like he can do everything except score. And you've heard that about Lindblom, too, right? Where it looks like he has just everything, all of the tools,
just
except
can't finish.
For the finishing.
Yeah.
I have more faith that he is going to start finishing earlier in his career than, let's say, Voracek did in his.
Yeah. And the one thing about him, too, is he's a fifth-round draft pick. It's a great find and development by the team to find that guy that's now on your second line, and that second line's been very good with Couturier. I think any player would die to play with Couturier, too, because of the way he possesses the puck.
Oh, yeah.
and the way that, you know, he makes line mates better just by creating space.
Is he overall their best player?
He's not their most skilled player, but he is their most important player, other
sure.
than the goaltender. To me, Giroux's still the most skilled player just because of what
Clearly.
He can do in the
yeah.
hockey IQ, and still even at 31 years old, the things that he can do with the puck and the way he sees the ice. But Couturier, and because he plays in the middle, is the most important skater on the team. Goalie's always the most important.
Yeah, you and I agree.
I'm never going to lose the goalie union card on this one. You know what I mean? But, you know, that being said, let me ask you this, though, too, because speaking of the goaltending,
yeah,
how did you feel about the re-signing of Brian Elliott to be the tandem goaltender?
Strange.
You found that strange?
I found it to be a little bit strange only because I didn't find it strange that the Flyers would want him back, right? Because Brian Elliott, in his tandem roles, you and I have documented this a lot, has been really good.
Yeah.
The struggles have come from Brian Elliott when asked to shoulder the load all the time.
Overuse.
When you're playing three games in a week or four games you know, in 10 days or something like that. That's a big ask, I think, for Brian Elliott. But I'm a little, like, I think it's strange that Elliott would want to come back. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like there are other opportunities. For example, like Winnipeg.
Yeah.
you've got Winnipeg with their goalie situation kind of hanging in the balance, right? Like, either Hellebuck's going to start doing something or he's not,
yeah.
And there's going to be somebody...
They committed to Hellebuck financially.
Well, they certainly did.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a team that thinks they have a cup window.
Mm.
We've seen teams not be afraid to make moves in the regular season if they think that it's going to help them out. And Brian Elliott's been a guy who can get hot in a tandem situation like that. I just thought that there might have been better situations across the league if he wanted to play more. Because if it's me... I'm riding Carter Hart until he proves that I can't. You know what I mean? If he starts to break down, then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
I think that based on what I've seen so far, it seems like he can handle it. It's a smart move by the Flyers.
Yeah.
Kind of a head-scratcher, I thought, for Brian Elliott.
Yeah, see, it was something that I was very vocal about, thinking that that was the right move for him and it was the right move for the team because... I think he recognized it's time at 33 to transition into that role because he knows his body. He knows his body. He can't,
sure.
He can't play 55, 58, 62 games a year anymore. His body's just not going to hold up with all the core injuries. But if used correctly and as a guy that can mentor a young goalie into showing him how to be an NHL goalie every day, if he could translate into that role, I thought it was a perfect situation. I was thrilled about it. I talked to him early in camp. I think it was the first preseason game. He said, you know, how did it come together? And he said it wasn't really in the cards, but it happened really fast. Things came together. They realized that they were going to go in a different direction than Cam Talbot, that Cam wasn't interested in the situation here.
Right.
And that, you know, the relationship that he has with Carter Hart was very good. The relationship he has with Kim Dillabaugh, the goaltending coach, is very good, which is always a huge component of it. And that he thought that this would be a place where now, you know, you can stay in the league a long time if you accept that role.
Oh, yeah.
And you can be the mentor and you can make a lot of money still.
Well,
Steve Mason's out of the league because he didn't accept that role.
My question is, and I've wondered this as we look across the league, is Jonathan Quick going to play for 10 more years after this? Because he probably
you
could.
You're walking 10 more years
but
playing that way.
But in that role. You
yeah.
know what I mean? To have like one more year of
yep.
really giving it a try and then existing, because there are so many things, not necessarily from a style standpoint, because how can Jonathan Quick teach how to be Jonathan Quick?
Yeah, he can't.
But from being a pro, going about it day after day.
Mm.
One thing that you could do a little bit, now he's not the world's best, like stick handling in the league, I think is something where some goalies, based on their equipment, are just not committing to it at all.
Yeah.
Like the way that their catch gloves are and things like that, they're just saying, no, forget about it. But some goalies who say, like Carter Hart is, I would say, a more willing puck handler
yeah.
than a good puck handler.
Yeah.
That's a scenario where it's like, hey, that's an area of improvement. And if you bring in a guy who's known for that, for example, that's something where you could add to his game. That was one of the other things where I thought, Brian Elliott's like an okay puck mm-hmm. handler, but he's not something that you'd think about.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, too. Like, you look at Elliott, you know, he's not going to guy that's going to re-revolutionize the position as it's been revolutionized over the past, God, decade at this point.
Yeah.
But you look at it, but Carter Hart is actually a little bit ahead in adding different elements to the position with a reactive position in positions that traditionally, like on a post-integration, would be static and you'd be stuck in a position. He'll bring his glove up into a reactive position and those things. He's kind of ahead of the curve.
Sure.
And it's from a technical standpoint in those regards. So, I mean, all the buzz right now is about Carter Hart. And, I mean, what a great start for him. What a great start for the team to go 2-0. Tough road trip coming up, though. Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. I don't know what Edmonton is right now. It's the second of a back-to-back. Vancouver's got some good young talent, so we'll see how they come off the West Coast. All said and done, though, 13,754 miles from the time they left Philadelphia to go to Switzerland and return from Edmonton on October 16th.
Yeah, they never do themselves any favors early on,
ooh,
do they?
That is tough.
They are always all over the place, but I do get the feeling they are better equipped now and their game travels better this year
mm-hmm.
than it has in the past. So if they come home from this Western road trip and this Canada swing with, you know, not having the wheels falling off, they're going to be in really, really good shape for the first month of the season.
You come out of that trip going 2-3 out to BC and then Alberta and taking on Calgary and Edmonton, and you'll take that start all
day long. No doubt.
All right, Joe, coming up next, we're going to talk to the one and only Chris Therrien. Yeah, longtime Flyer. I'll have a conversation with Bundy right after this. You're listening to Fanatic Flyers Weekly right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Here with us now, the one and only. You see him on NBC Sports Philadelphia on Flyers pre- and post-game live. He played the game. He is the game. It's Chris Therrien. Bundy, what's going on, brother?
Chase, man. Good to see you, buddy. Everything's great. You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm really excited today. And that was, I didn't want to take any disrespect to the last generation of Flyers players like the Kimo Thiemann and Hartnell type of group. But you know what? The building last night was as loud as any time I can remember in a regular season game, going back to my days. I mean, that place was rocking last night. And it certainly brought back some very, very fond memories of playing in Philadelphia in front of a sold-out crowd that was absolutely rambunctious the entire time.
Yeah, Bundy, it's crazy that you say that, because I was up in the press box for the first period, and when they got to the TV timeout, and they did the thing for Simmons, and the ovation that he got was very obviously nice, great, and the building was alive all night. But why, you know, they're coming into a new season. It's a new coaching regime, and there's some optimism here. You're just 1-0 coming in. Your first game was on a Friday afternoon in Prague of the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
What can you attribute the kind of buzz that was in the building last night to?
I don't know. And I'll be honest with you.
I can't figure it out.
I didn't expect it. You know, like, I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie, dude. Last year was a rough year. It was a very, very painful season.
Yeah.
You know, it was actually at times putting more than perfume on a goat at times, you know, trying to cover the team. And, you know, it happens. Every team in any kind of sport, whether you've been a great franchise or one that's just been mired in mediocrity for a long time, like many teams you see across pro sports, that was disappointing because it was the Philadelphia Flyers. And you know, they've had such a standard of excellence since their inception in the league, going back a long time. But that standard has run through every single player that has played there, that wore the orange and black jersey, and that reverberated the same sentiment that you know, it was all about team. It was about winning. It was about being passionate, blue collar type of hockey team. And, I thought last night was, a return to that. And very nice to see with the great goaltending, the new coaching staff. It looks almost, I don't want to say it yet because I may be jumping the gun. We get too excited in early October games, but almost like a power shift too. And I think that kind of needs to happen, on a team where you have a veteran coach come in with a group of guys and veterans that have been, you know, have not had a deep run after 2010, Drew being the guy on that team. So, you know, he's got carte blanche to coach, and the only way to overcome that, I actually have an article coming out tomorrow about, you know, teams adapting to new coaching staff, especially ones with a pedigree like AV has. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes, but I definitely see a lot of the younger guys are going to have to take a huge bite of the apple this year if this team is going to, you know, reset, get moving towards the spring tournament to try to win that Stanley Cup. And are they a contender right this minute? No. But that doesn't mean that they can't grow this thing together, build the team together, as they're doing right now. They've got some great team bonding experiences with the long trips to start early.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one benefit from it. I don't like the schedule per se, that you got to go halfway around the world to play, you know, your third regular season game in Vancouver Saturday night. But, you know, that's the way it is. And, but you know what? I'm so optimistic after what I saw last night, and I can't say that about many games last season at all.
Yeah, no question about it. We knew the home opener last year, 8-2 defeat against San Jose. And then last night, it's almost like the complete juxtaposition. You get a 4-0 shutout with a 21-year-old goaltender that this city's been pining for. And you and I have always looked at the game very similarly from the crease out, Bundy. So let's start with the crease and the goaltender in the game last night. The 5-on-3, your goaltender's got to be your best penalty killer. And to make that kind of save in that situation, after really, it was really the second 5-on-3 man advantage you had. That one was a full 2 minutes. But for your goalie to bail you out with a full post-to-post, dot-to-dot pass, one-timer, and make that save, that gives so much energy to the bench.
It does. And when you have a goaltender, and even early in the game, I know that I had the first 8 minutes was just chaos in there. Everyone was saying hello to everyone. I was in seeing the Philadelphia Warriors, but I got a chance to, who are champions, by the way, in Vegas this past week. I just did a tremendous job, and you know how both of us, how much support we have for our American military. Those guys are real heroes, and it was terrific to see them. But get back to the game. I know he made some really key saves early in that first period, too, but certainly the end of the second period with that two-minute five-on-three. Yeah, you know, making saves like that, they're going to give you a chance to win a hockey game, especially when it was 1-0 at the time, you know. So, you know, one or two saves is the difference. And last night it was probably two or three great saves through the game, and none better than that slide across and the glove hand on the shot by Taylor Hall. And I'm sure he thought that was going in.
Oh, yeah. Well, no question about it. You're talking about a guy who won the Hart just 2 years ago as well in Taylor Hall. So it's a guy who can bring a great shot, and he certainly did there, and Hart was up to the task. As a defenseman, a guy who played in the league a long time, you played in front of really good goaltenders at times. You played in front of some ones that where you're like, oh, boy, if anything gets through, this kid can't stop a beach ball from the blue line tonight. When you have that behind you as a defenseman, as a skater on a team, how much does that affect you mentally in the way that you can approach the game in transition?
Well, it allows you to play your game more. It allows you to maybe take that extra split second to try to make a play rather than any kind of panic. Because when you have a goaltender that you're not 100% sure on, and I've been in those cases, you know, whether it's a guy going through a slump and you knew it, or just a guy being a flat-out bad goaltender. I mean, that happens sometimes, and you have to deal with the adversity of it. But at the same time, when you have a guy you trust, it's a great feeling, because then you can play your position with a little bit more free hand, a little bit more confidence, knowing that if there is a mistake or something happens or a play breaks down, that goaltender is probably 95 or 98% of the time going to be there to bail you out. And I think that's what it's all about. So, you know, when you play, I played top 4 minutes on defense. My partner was one of the best in the business in this organization. And so, you know, that was really important for us, because, you know, we check the other team's top lines, and now look at like a guy like Provorov now who's with Braun. It's the same thing. It just allows you to have a little bit more confidence, maybe open your eyes a little bit more in the zone and have that willingness to maybe make a play at times. It's not a high-risk play, just a play that's a good play that maybe you wouldn't make if you weren't as confident in your goaltender.
And one of the things that I've noticed in the first couple of games here under Alain Vigneault, didn't see it as much, at least not as pronounced in the preseason, and there's a variety of reasons why. Guys, you know, different combinations and those kind of things, but the forecheck for the Flyers looks like it's really providing a lot of fits for the opposition, a lot of second-chance opportunities once they get in the zone and get on the forecheck, and they seem to be coming in like multiple waves right now. What are you seeing out of the Flyers' forecheck? Checking how the opposition defense has been handling it.
Yeah, it's been really, really good. I mean, if there's one area on this team so far that stood out, and even if you read a lot of the fan forums or you see stuff on Twitter, it's been pretty prevalent and obvious that the biggest adjustment, the things that are happening, is on the forecheck. Listen, they're getting after the puck. You know, there's one thing to forecheck, and there's one thing to forecheck a zone or an area. To me, that's fine and all. But it doesn't really help you retrieve the puck. The problem is now in this league is there's so many defensemen that can really make good plays with the puck that you put yourself behind the eight ball if you don't get after it. So the Flyers are doing now with strong two men going after it. They're using a little bit more of the youthful legs, and they're getting after the puck. And that's the difference. So if you could repossess that puck in the offensive zone, you know, and you keep hemming guys in and keep that puck coming back towards the other team, you're going to fatigue teams. You're going to wear them out. And you're going to have your puck retrieval is going to be higher, far more significant than it was at any point last year. So that's been the biggest thing I've seen, the way that this team has really gone after the puck, strong style forechecking. And at the same time, it's allowed that third man and defenseman to play pivotal parts as well and be more aggressive.
Yeah, and you saw the goal last night by Provorov in the game. It turns out to be the game winner, the first one.
Yeah.
And Bundy, when you look at that too, you know, I'm not comparing this Flyers team by any way, shape, or form to that Tampa Bay team last year, but Tampa Bay, when you watch them, it seemed like they always had the puck. You look at Carolina so far this year, they always have the puck. Just if you own the puck, you own the game.
You do, and that's a fair point. You know, and again, I want to see more of this team before I, you know, start putting them into a comparison. I don't think you were doing that.
But no, yeah.
Right. Yeah, those teams, but Tampa Bay is a team that likes to hang on to the puck. That's a learned team skill, you know, and that involves everybody. You can't have half the guys in and half the guys out. You have to have a complete mental fortitude that every guy buys into it, and then that's how your execution comes through and it shines through. So I mean, they've done some really, really good things. I love the fresh views we've seen offensively. We've seen a lot of shifting bodies, moving parts out there, and very, very creative. So, you know, I think, again, you know, I like the fact that, you know, I don't know, maybe you saw it too, Jason, but you know what? It looks like the team's not robotic.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they're actually playing hockey, where I thought last year there was a lot of robotics involved, and you just can't play this game unless you're allowed to freewheel to some point, to be creative to some point. But these guys are playing hockey. It's been a lot of fun to watch through two games. I'm glad the preseason's over with, get some of the iron, some of the kinks out. But let's also keep in mind, it is early. The Devils were a non-playoff team, as was Chicago last year, and the Flyers. So, you know, let's just let's keep our heads above us. It's a big, challenging road trip coming up for them, and I'm really excited to see how they do on it. But all signs point to a revamped and rehashed Flyers roster this year that I think is going to be really, really exciting for this city.
All right, last question for Chris Terrien on Fanatic. Flyers Weekly. You played throughout your career through many different coaches, whether, you know, that was an in-season change or an off-season change. It puts everybody on notice. And you know the pedigree that a guy like Alain Vigneault and this staff comes in, a couple of other former head coaches in Michelle Therrien and Mike Yeo. So there's a lot of high pedigree on that bench across it. When you're playing for a new coach and everybody comes in and they're buying in as they are right now, What does that do to the players' mentality really in the beginning of a season? Some players, it can overwhelm them. Other players can thrive on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think what it does, though, when you're allowed to play like that and, you know, you are bought into what the coach has and what the way the team is playing, it's a great feeling. I mean, when you, like I said, I've said this in the past, you know, when you go on winning streaks, it feels like you're never going to lose. And unfortunately, when you go on losing streaks, it feels like you're never going to win a game again either. But, you know, right now it's every single guy in that team should feel confident right now about what's going on. The one thing I see with the games, the Flyers have not trailed yet in the game, so that'll be another test when that does come about. But again, you know, I think right now the team is playing with a team that looks like excited to play for a new coach, excited about the prospects coming off a disappointing season last year. They've added some quality veterans. The guys we mentioned, Hayes, Niskanen, Justin Braun, just to name a few. So, these guys here have had good playoff runs, but I think the early going in the season, Jace, I think there should be nothing but a good feeling after the first two games of how this team's responded to the start of the season.
Yeah, and a new message certainly carries a little bit more weight when you win right away. And to do it the way they have, yeah, it certainly does. Bundy, we'll be talking to you all season, man. Another year of Fanatic Flyers Weekly. We'll be watching you on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Hockey's back, brother.
Yeah, you got it, buddy. I'm really excited and look forward to these shows almost once a week, it seems like. That'd be great.
No doubt about it. Chris Terrien joining us. Stay tuned. Fanatic Flyers Weekly continues after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yes, welcome back to the Fanatic Flyers Weekly program. Joe Torti here with you. You know, we haven't taken phone calls, so we want to open up the phone lines now, 610-632-0975, because I know that some people coming back from the game yesterday, the euphoria over Carter Hart and having a 4-0 shutout. Kind of remarkable. It's a pinch-me moment. Your first instinct, for whatever reason, and I blame you, but you know I at least understand, might not have been to call 97.5 The Fanatic and talk about what you saw and everything else. But talking to Jason Mertidis, who you know, obviously had that great interview with Bundy a little bit ago and was talking about everything that goes into this new Flyers team, kind of the new look from the top down and everything else that goes into what this team has become in a pretty short period of time. It's been fascinating to watch the transformation. I anticipate that because you do have a lot of the same players there, it's not going to be a total and complete transformation for you. It's not going to be something that you just see all come together and you wouldn't recognize the team. Obviously, the names and a lot of the faces are still there, right? Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, Sean Couturier, Travis Konecny, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what's already become apparent is that the deployment of these guys and the system and the way that things work now has gotten to be so different relative to what we've been used to seeing from these Flyers. And it seems as though, at least early on, the scheme matches what they're trying to do from a personnel standpoint. It augments their strengths, and it seems as though through just, you know, two games, granted, we'll see what happens on this Canada swing, but it seems as though things are coming together for the team, and it feels like this is a group that's got it going on a little bit synergy-wise. And that's what you're usually spending the entire season searching for or trying to solidify, right? When you first discover it or you get a little spark, perhaps that is something that you consider to be step one. And then you spend most of the early part of the season trying to really cement that and establish your identity, who you're going to be, what your team's going to look like, what it looks like when your team's doing well, and what things go wrong when things start to slide sideways. So looking forward to watching the Flyers doing that over the course of certainly the next several weeks here. And the team led by Carter Hart and you know, Kevin Hayes has looked to be a pretty good acquisition so far, free agent wise. Alain Vigneault's leadership has been palpable on the team. You heard Jason talk about it, where you're seeing a team that is kind of received a message, a shot across the bow, where status quo is no longer going to be acceptable in terms of the way that things have been before. Music to my ears. Because one of the things that you, the oldest expressions that you ever hear, right, is that, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It kind of feels as though we've been circling that drain a little bit with the Flyers earlier on. And, you know, it does tend to feel like sometimes, and it's not just here, it happens across the league, it happens to feel like Groundhog Day whenever you can't get something going. You feel like you're spinning your wheels, you win a game, you lose two, and then you're losing your momentum. You're sliding down the standings, and you're watching people in the division do their damage. Now it seems as though the Flyers are going to be one of those teams that can be the beneficiaries of the power shakeup, right? When you look at the division, and it seems like Columbus and Pittsburgh might be sliding, and the Flyers are going to be one of those teams that can step up and deliver a plug for that power vacuum. It's going to be a really fascinating watch over the course of the next several years, but certainly the next several weeks are where it starts. Hopefully this is going to be a continual new era, but the groundwork does kind of get laid, just like a construction project early on in the first little while here. So very cool to be able to kind of be talking about the Flyers on such a high note at this point, considering that the team went 4-0 over Detroit, or over New Jersey, rather, the Devils. And you saw Wayne Simmonds on the other bench. You saw Gritty messing with P.K. Subban. All kinds of good stuff was going on. And it was great to talk about the Flyers with you, with Jason Mertidis, with Bundy, and everything else. So thank you very much to everybody who did call in to talk Flyers earlier. And obviously it was a great conversation. Looking forward to continuing that over the course of the Flyers season. This has been the Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Stay tuned. I will be on the airwaves from 8 until midnight, joined by Devon Givens. Looking forward to that. And we'll talk to you in a matter of moments right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.